And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ here. Bucky is he's on the road, another all-star game. He's at the HBCU Classic, so he's going to be involved with that broadcast there, which will be on NFL Network. So hopefully you guys will look out for that one. But we've got Nabil here. Nabil, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. You know, excited that everything's getting amped up for us. So the combine, the pro days, the draft. So it's our time to shine.
Yeah, it's the best producer in the business, by the way, Nabil. If you don't get to hear him talk very much, but we do talk about him because of really his Packer fandom, by the way. Are you confident? Rodgers is coming back?
Yeah, I've been confident even last year when all the rumors are going on. I think that Rodgers will be back for sure with Devontae Adams franchise tag. So let's go.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think that you will see something get done there and Aaron Rodgers. We'll be back. We've got a fun show for you today. That we've got Scott Pioli, who is a three-time Super Bowl champion. He's been a general manager a couple different spots. He's really one of the bright minds in the NFL and somebody that always enjoy catching up with. He's a colleague for us now at NFL Network, and get a chance to visit with him about what we can learn from the Rams, if anything. Going to hear some great stories from his time with the Patriots and issue a warning to GMs as we head towards free agency. Beware of blank. He's going to fill in that for us. So a great conversation here with Scott Pioli. Hope you guys enjoy it. All right, excited to have my good buddy Scott Pioli joining me right now. Scott is a partner, former NFL GM, current analyst with us here at NFL Network. Scott, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. We're on to the new season.
I know. By the way, what was that moment like, especially with the Super Bowl teams? You know, how much time did you give yourself to enjoy that versus, oh my gosh, the combine's in a couple weeks?
You know, DJ, it's crazy. So I'll never forget the first Super Bowl, Super Bowl 36. We win, and it's so the 2001 season, but it happens in February 3rd of 2002. I can't remember birthdays, but I can remember the first Super Bowl.
I bet you can.
So, you know, we get on the plane and I'm a mess, you know, because I know you know the drill. We'd already had the December draft meetings. We had already had the post December draft meetings, and we always had draft meetings in February right before we went to the combine. And free agency's coming, so the free agent board is set. And I look at Bill and I say, can we get together, you know, on the plane? And as soon as the plane takes off, we get together and we went right to work. We had to talk about when the meetings were, right, because he's going to give the coaches a day off. We're right to the calendar. Okay, coaches are going to have this week off. All right, Bill, we have to have this meeting. Because again, DJ, none of the coaches have looked at any of the college players now. They haven't looked at the free agent players unless maybe we played against them during the year. The head coach hasn't looked at any. Bill wasn't in the December meetings. He wasn't in the other meetings. Every once in a while, he'd come up and want to see some of the names and stuff, but he hadn't watched tape. It's now the first week of February, and no one knows what's going on. So you've got to have this plan. And along with the plan, it's got to be an accelerated plan because free agency is getting ready to start. And I remember this too, DJ, was 2002. If you remember, that was the year that the Houston Texans came in the league.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So we also had to talk about the five guys that we were exposed for the expansion draft. So we're sitting there, and here it wasn't even 12 hours since we'd won the Super Bowl, and we're already getting ready to potentially say goodbye to guys because we're going to have to expose them. And, you know, when you expose players to the expansion draft, they feel very unwanted. It's a really awkward kind of situation. I mean, we haven't had one in 20 years. So there's a lot of people are like, expansion draft? What the heck is that? Yeah. But DJ, it's right to work because you've got 2.5 months before the draft and it's go time.
I want to stay on the Patriots here for a minute before we get to the Super Bowl, what we saw there and what maybe we can learn from the Rams and how they accomplished a championship this year. But the Patriots, this last year, man, it was an aggressive free agent push with the Patriots, something we haven't seen very much of. Is that a product of just the rookie quarterback contract, or was this, you know, in your, I won't lead the witness. You tell me that why you thought we saw such an aggressive approach.
Well, here's what's really fascinating, DJ, and because I've listened to that narrative quite a bit, and you know, it's funny because the Patriots had this long period of success, people forget what the beginning was like. Mm-hmm. And what people don't remember was in 2001, the offseason of 2001, we signed 23 free agent players.
Wow.
By the time the season ended, 19 of those players were still with us. What was different, what the Patriots did differently this past year was the amount of money that they spent. Mm-hmm. And it was how they did free agency. They went out and got expensive type of free, you know, expensive free agents. But what we did, again, it wasn't, again, when I hear revisionist history of how we built that team, we had some core players. Yes, we had Ty Law. We had Lawyer Malloy. We had Willie McGinnis. You know, we married into a couple of players. Mm-hmm. But what people forget, again, you go back to 2001, that offseason, 23 free agents. I mean, Mark Edwards, Joe Andrewsy, Mike Compton, the list goes on and on. We had to rebuild that very quickly and very differently. So what the Patriots did to me that was interestingly different was not that they used free agency. It's about how they spent in free agency and how they had mm-hmm. done that. And they had to go out and get players, you know, that were more expensive. That group of 23 free agents, you know, Larry Izzo, Mike Vrabel, Roman Pfeiffer, mm-hmm. those guys cost us a complete total of $2.5 million in signing bonuses. and again, because we were getting players that were free agents, but they weren't flashy sizzle names. They were guys that we felt could fit into the system. So that's kind of how we did it.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that system, because one of the things we talked about on the podcast yesterday was, you know, we've had the McVay tree, right, with all these coaches coming from, and if you want to put them under McVay or Shanahan, whatever, there are a lot of them, they're running similar stuff, and they have similar core beliefs, one of which, like with receivers, they want them to all be interchangeable to be able to play all three spots. It's not like kind of the building the basketball team with what other teams are trying to do. But my thing was, now that McVay's been to two of these things and won one of them, it's going to embolden those guys from that tree to say, hey, we know what our system is. We know that it works at the highest level. So we need to bring in players that fit what we do. So, and some of these new coaches that are going into new situations, or young coaches at current situations, I think we might see some more movement than we've seen in years past because of what you guys did forever, which was, hey, we know what fits us. We don't care exactly what you guys like, but this fits us. I think this is going to embolden a lot of coaches to say, hey, trust our vision. Let's go get the guys that fit us.
And DJ, here, you know, it's funny because as you're 100% right. And that's what we did in New England. We went out and found players that not only fit us scheme-wise, systematically, but from a makeup standpoint.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember when it was very early in my career, and I would sit in some of those meetings and listen to some coaches and scouts and directors. And if a guy didn't fit, there's always, you know, you've been in, you were in the million, there's that disrespectful talk. Oh, that guy sucks. Or this guy's. Yeah. And I remember thinking to myself, I learned a really important message. I'm going to digress here. Back when I was a graduate assistant at Syracuse, and Dick McPherson, God rest his soul, one of the greatest men to ever to be in this game. We were having a recruiting meeting, and one of the coaches was just beating this kid up. Oh, he's this, he's that, and just
can't do really right. Negative. Can't do this. Can't do that.
But also in terminology that's just inappropriate, right? Yeah. And I'll never forget. Max slams his fist down. Says, and I won't say the guy's name. He goes, "Don't you ever say that again. That's somebody's son you're talking about. That's someone's brother you're talking about. That could be your son." And it was one of those moments, again, I go years later where now I'm in the NFL and I'm hearing coaches and scouts talk that way. And I remember bringing it up to Bill at one point in time, and it wasn't necessarily, but I said, like, hey, just because a guy doesn't fit what we do doesn't mean that he stinks. It doesn't mean that he's a bad guy. It's just not the right fit. Mm-hmm. So can, you know, why don't we all talk in different terms here and talk about, let's find the guys that, let's talk about what they can do.
Absolutely.
And here's this is the brilliance of Bill B is you give him a player that can do something. Again, I talked about those 23 free agents. They could all do at least one or two things really well. Yep. And then Bill found a spot for him, and Bill, you know, he didn't have this system that you had to be a part of. He would find what you could do within the system. And what you're saying with Sean, you know, as a general manager, as a VP of player personnel, whatever that title is, the personnel guy.
Yeah, yeah.
even if the structure, the hierarchical structure is that of where the GM hires the head coach or the head coach, whatever that is, it doesn't matter. As soon as the head coach is in place, the personnel department, the general manager, everyone needs to become a servant and a servant leader to the coaching staff. Because at the end of the day, that's who the players are paying attention to. And the personnel department is not only to get the physical fit, but to get the makeup fit that's going to match the personality of the head coach.
Now, and that's why I think, you know, some of these coaches coming into new environments and they're going to say, hey, this guy might be really, really talented, but in terms of the fit, whether it's schematically or makeup wise, he doesn't really fit what we want to do going forward, which to me was so much coaching turnover. I think that's why we could see an active, a robust trade market.
And to me, one of the great examples of the Rams is Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
And people could think what they want. Unless you live with him and on it, you don't know what he is or who he is. So I leave that out of it. But here's what we do know. He got there and he was happy. And Sean and Les have a culture there that he could thrive in. So kudos to the Rams and kudos. You know, again, he's a talent. He's fitting the right way for now.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And to go back to what you're saying about, you know, having Bill's done such a masterful job of being able to take guy if he does one thing and put him in position to do that thing very well. I joke about one of my buddies in the league, and we call it the Three Amigos theory, which is if you've seen the Three Amigos, when he comes back to the town,
they can't see me, but I know that.
Oh, he knows the whole dance. So when he go, El Wapo's coming, right? And they go, what is it that this town does really well? And the lady goes, we can sew. You're like that, like, hey, he's a speed rusher only, Scott. That's but he can sew. Like, that's the one thing he can do. So we're going to set him up to do that one thing.
Right. I'll give you a perfect example from the 2001 season. Our center that year was Damian Woody.
Yeah.
Okay. However, what people, again, I love to listen to people tell their version of what our team was. But do you know that every time that we went to shotgun, Damian Woody moved to guard and Mike Compton moved from guard to center because Woody couldn't shotgun snap.
Wow. I did not know that.
And, you know, and here was Mike Compton. I talk about free agent. He was one of the most important free agents that we signed. He had started at left tackle, right tackle, left guard, right guard, and center. He had started all five offensive lines. One of the smartest football players I'd ever been around. And he had mostly been a center in the league. And he would move. They would swap because Woody couldn't shotgun snap. He could do one thing.
I mean, hey, the Three Amigos theory. Let's make this a reality. Let's make this part of the lexicon, the football lexicon.
I love it. Only if we could kick it off by doing. It wasn't even
My Little Buttercup. We can sing My Little Buttercup if you'd like. It doesn't matter. That's fine.
I like this podcast.
What else? What else do you think? You know, I know a lot of teams. A couple teams I was on. We would always in usually on the pro side, on the pro personnel side. We would kind of take the final four teams and just try and do a deep dive study and just say, okay, what can we learn? Has anything changed? Is the league going in a different direction? Is there anything, you know, from these two Super Bowl teams or maybe from the final four, the playoffs that you think is a takeaway that the rest of the league might catch up to?
Well, I don't know if we're learning anything new. I will say this. I don't know if there's anything new. I mean, obviously, well, if you get a quarterback, Tom Brady last year, Matthew Stafford this year.
Are you surprised, Scott, at how, I mean, really actually bad from the Bengals standpoint, offensive line wise, and how I would say mediocre to average the Rams offensive line was to have two teams in the Super Bowl?
I was because I am a big believer in up front and eventually. But
likewise.
However, here's what we'll say. Both teams were playing with fire. Yeah. All year. Matthew Stafford got hammered a couple times. Joe Burrow.
Tennessee beat the tar out of Matthew Stafford.
Nine sacks. I don't know how many hits. I mean, he was sacked this year, the third most times in a season. And oh, by the way, last year's rookie year, right before he tore his ACL, and I was praying every week that it wouldn't happen. You know, in those first, it was nine games plus part of the 10th, he was leading, getting sacked.
Yeah.
And so we saw in this Super Bowl, both guys got rolled up on.
Yep.
And it was this close. And I know this is a podcast. I'm putting my fingers really close together.
Very close.
To going the wrong way. And here's what I'll say. It depends on what you're trying to build, right? if you want to be sustainable, you do have to have an offensive line.
Yep.
If it's going to be sustainable with a really good quarterback. But again, if you're looking for, again, the Buccaneers were a great example from the standpoint, Tommy played really, really well last year. And I think they were one of the only, one of only a handful of teams or less than a handful of teams that had all five starting offensive linemen for every game. Yep. And so when the Bucs did it, now we fast forward to this year, again, both teams got away with it. And, you know, you go back last year to the Chiefs, that, you know, that was one of their Achilles heels. Their offensive line was good.
That's why lost in the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Exactly right. So to me, just because you get away with something doesn't mean that it's okay. Right. I mean, that's one 100%. Of the stories of the National Football League. It's just like, just because a player has a bad game doesn't mean he's a bad player. Sometimes on the flip side, you know, you got to be careful that you don't allow, you know, current mistakes to become the seeds of future defeats.
That's a great phrase. I was talking with a GM buddy, a mutual friend, and we were talking about just kind of looking at the, you know, the teams in the Super Bowl, and we started talking about the Bengals, and he said, look, when you really study it and look at it over the last 10, 15, 20 years, like, it, to have an offensive line like this is an aberration. Like, it's not, exactly. don't trick yourself into thinking you can do this. You know?
Yeah. Right. There will always be exceptions, and it's just like, it's different, but it's similar. Someone hit me with this question before the Super Bowl. This, how about this new trend in the NFL? The two youngest coaches in the history of the game, you know, this is a new thing. I'm like, just because something happens once or twice doesn't make it a trend. You know, go back a year ago and we had a matchup of the combined two oldest coaches, you know, with Andy Reid and Bruce Arians. So just because something happens one time, again, doesn't make it a trend. It doesn't mean that it's okay. You need to not be cynical, but always question why. That's what good scouts do. You know, we grew up in a very similar scouting family, DJ. So
I know everything, you know, because for those who don't know, I started with the Baltimore Ravens, and Ozzie Newsome obviously played for Coach Belichick, and that's he worked under Coach with you. And so that's where everything came from. So if you kind of look at the success that the Ravens, this sustained success that they've had, and you look at the Patriots, obviously the unmatched success that they've had, they speak the same language. We would sit in the draft room, Scott, and you know, we put red stars on players, right? So every scout gets a chance to put their red star on one guy. And the red star, it was so many times where, like, I put it on Logan Mankins. And it was because the Patriots and the Ravens, we valued a lot of the same qualities and traits in players.
Absolutely. And that was because, you know, and Ozzie and Phil, they all knew, because Kirk Ferentz was the offensive line coach and Pat Hill was the assistant offensive line coach. Yep. Pat was coaching Logan at Fresno State, but it was right. It was the same type of guys that you were looking for positionally. And, you know, DJ, we just missed each other because I was there. I was with the Browns when Bill was fired, still under contract. Yeah. So I was there for the 96 draft, the Ray Lewis, Jonathan Ogden draft.
That was pretty
good.
Yeah.
There's a funny story. It's a much longer story, but one of the greatest leadership moments I've ever seen was when Ozzie chose to look at Mr. Modell and say, you know,
Lawrence Phillips, right?
He wanted Lawrence Phillips. Yeah. Exactly right. Mr. Modell did. And thankfully Ozzie did the right thing. But, you know, it's funny that 96 year, you know, and pro personnel, I was allowed to hire one intern to be my pro slappy, as we call him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, who was it?
DaCosta.
DaCosta.
That's amazing.
He was coaching linebackers at Trinity, but he'd grown up with one of my college teammates and roommates. He's like, yeah, I know this guy. And I dug all the vowels in his name. So we brought him in.
You guys combined for a lot of vowels there, man.
Yeah, we did. We led the league in vowels.
Yeah, no doubt. This is going to be an interesting offseason for them, by the way. They've got to figure out, you know, with Lamar and his contract. By the way, Lamar, which brings me this interesting nugget, the fact that he's his own agent. Did you ever deal with players that were their own agent?
One time. Well, that's not true. So officially, Teddy Bruschi, who had Brad Blank, and Brad Blank had represented him, but it was Teddy's last deal, I think. And, you know, Brad was still his advisor, but Teddy wanted to negotiate with me. So Teddy and I did his last deal. But I also know in one of Brady's extensions, the first big one, Don Yee was his agent.
Yeah.
And Don and I were, you know, at loggerheads. And this was, gosh, it was the year that Manning had gone to this astronomical $14 million. And I think Drew Brees' deal was 13 and a half, meaning average a year.
Yeah.
And we were like trying to keep this team together. and we had a ceiling and we were just at this standstill. And Brady came into my office, closed the door and said, "We got to get this done." I'm like, "Tommy, we can't have this conversation, Tommy." Don's still your agent. And he's like, "Come on, man." So there were a couple of times, not a whole lot, but a couple of times. You know, I remember like, you know, with Carl Banks, it was pretty transparent.
What was it? I'm just curious when that, like, how do you argue against their number to their face? Like that to me would, like the Lamar thing seems to be so challenging when he says, "Hey, I want Josh Allen's deal or Josh Allen's deal plus." And then, you inevitably could get to the point where like, well, we're not going to pay you what they paid Josh Allen.
It gets awkward. And I remember with Brady, it wasn't, because here's the thing. I think if there's a respectful relationship, just like there was with Brewski, you get in there and say, "Listen, if we're going to talk business, we have to compartmentalize things. And unfortunately, we're going to talk business." And people say, "Oh, it's not personal, it's business." Well,
it's always personal.
When you're talking about someone's money, it's, but here's the thing is I had negotiated my own contracts. I never had an agent. So I had to negotiate my contract directly with Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft. I had to negotiate, with Bill back when I was a slappy with the Browns. Mm. You know, you go through those experiences and you learn that you just need to treat those conversations with absolute respect and that you understand the rules of engagement. I remember saying, "Brew, there might be some uncomfortable things said here. Mm-hmm. Let's just understand. Let's preface this with, I love you. Okay. Yeah. I love you and I respect you. And now we're talking business."
Yeah.
And if I cross this line and I'm a jerk, you need to let me know if I'm being a jerk, because it's not going to be intentional. And that was, I remember the same thing with Brady when he got himself involved. That was, that was just weird because he had an agent and you're not allowed to do it. And he's like, "I don't care. I just want to get this done."
Yeah. Which I'm sure Don loved that phone call, by the way.
"Oh,
hey, dude. Tom, how's it going? Well, I just left Scott's office." "You what?"
No, here's what he did. Tommy said in the meeting, we were talking and he was talking numbers. "Where are you guys at?" He says, "Get Don on the phone." I'm like, "Tommy, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
We're not doing this." He goes, "Get Don on the phone." He dials Don.
Wow.
And, "Hey, Tommy." "Hey, Tommy, how you doing? What's going on?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm doing great. Hey, I'm up here in Scott's office."
Oh, boy.
Dead silence.
I bet. Pregnant pause.
It was very pregnant. It was very long labor. It was interesting. It really was. But, the deal got done. The money got agreed to. But, I respect Don so much. Don was a friend, is a friend. Mm-hmm. And I respected him. And it wasn't necessarily fair the way it happened. But I know this, man. When we got down to the language part of the contract, that took weeks. Yeah. We agreed to the money. And he says, "Okay, here we go. Now the language is going to be..." And it was one of those things where I respect Don so much. It got weird, but it got done and everyone was happy in the end. The process could have been better, right? Yeah. The process could have been better.
You got where you need to be. All right. Last question, then I'm going to let you run. You've been so generous with your time. This is getting ready to head into free agency. We've talked about, some of the key moves that you've made, really at all your stops, and a bunch of them that have led to championship level football. And you live by the water where they have warning signs, right? The tide and this, and you have shark, whatever. They've got
Riptide,
So what would you give GMs a free piece of information on? Just, hey, beware of what as we head into free agency?
Beware of not being able to serve your coaching staff and the franchise. Put yourself and your feelings. You need to have feelings, beliefs, strength of opinion, but everything you do in player acquisition, serve the greater good. And because to me, that's what you're doing. And I mean it, I said it before, DJ, lead as a servant. Your job as a general manager is to serve everybody else and to put the team together with the not only the good players, but the right players that match. So that would be, I don't know if that was the right answer the answer to the question, but be a servant, man.
That's great. That is great advice. Something to think about as we head towards free agency. And again, I'm going to keep banging this drum. I think we see a lot of movement this offseason. I think a lot of these coaches are in new situations and they're going to inherit some talent, but they're going to say they're talented, but they don't match.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll say this, DJ, the reason I think you're right, we're seeing this new thing where players are more empowered than they've ever been. And they're forcing the hands of, I don't want to say of ownership, of leadership, of what it is. So it's going to be an interesting combination.
Yeah. Looking forward to a fun off season, but man, I always enjoy our conversations, whether doing podcasts or just catching up in person or on the phone. You're the best, man. I appreciate all your time today.
We need to do more. Thanks, brother. Be well.
Thanks, man. All right, that was always great to catch up with Scott. Hope you guys were able to take something from that. I mean, to me, the servant leadership and the alignment organizationally is huge. As a general manager, you can't get married to past decisions. It's all about the future. If you have guys that have talent but they don't fit, and you've got a staff in there that needs other skills at those positions, I think you've got to kind of swallow your pride a little bit, make the adjustments, and see if you can't put the best roster out there that fits what your current coaching staff is looking for. I think that's great advice. Really a fascinating conversation there with Scott Pioli. You enjoy it, Nabil? What do you think, man?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. And Scott's a guy, you know, I looked up to even when I was in college, and I would email him getting advice about scouting. So he's built the Patriots up, and it's a guy I always looked up to, and, you know, it was great, a great conversation. I took a lot away from it.
Yeah, no doubt. I enjoyed it as well. We'll have Bucky back on Thursday. We're going to really start jumping into the draft now. Been cranking a bunch of these players. I'm going to finish up the defensive linemen. I'll have all the defensive linemen that are going to the combine done here by the time we get to the next podcast. So maybe we dig in, talk some of these pass rushers, which it is a really deep, talented group in this upcoming draft. We'll get that on Thursday, among some other things. So I hope you guys have enjoyed it. I look forward to being back with you on Thursday. We'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks.